As a roofer, the last thing you need is to not have what you need. So when it comes to roofing materials, the Home Depot has you covered for every job. We carry underlayment, leak barriers, starter strips and shingles from top trusted brands like GAF. With bulk discounts and job site delivery, we have everything you need for the entire roofing job under one roof. Take your next roofing job from start to finish with one stop. The Home Depot. How doers get more done. U.S. only. See store for details.
This is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
This is one lap to go. I love it. Ganassi is letting the drivers fight it out amongst themselves. Who's the best? Who's going to get it done? The master, the 45-time winner and five-time champion, Scott Dixon, trying to defend for his rookie teammate. They come together in the keyhole, nearly touch.
Oh, and Newgarden and Hunter Ray get together.
Oh, podium. No.
Newgarden's off. That is a huge championship implication.
That's the championship leader around, and the rest of the crowd will pick up massive points in the title fight with four to go after today.
And Dixon could hold off Rosenquist. This allows Dixon to close in the championship massively, but does Rosenquist get Dixon right here?
He'll look around the inside, now try to swing to the outside. The teammates are side by side. One going for win number 46, the other for number one in IndyCar. Dixon is still in front.
I think Dixon has it.
He's out of tires, but I don't think he can handle it.
Three more turns to go. Championship points at stake. And rims at stake. Felix Rosenquist has a couple of more corners. His veteran teammate, Scott Dixon, trying to hold him up. One more time. Final corner. Dixon wiggles to the line. Rosenquist on his gearbox dives into the side.
Well done there, Scott.
Scott Dixon will win one of the closest road course races we've seen for the 46th time and the 6th time here at Mid-Ohio. Scott Dixon has done it.
Welcome to Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan from Indianapolis or thereabouts. Thanks for joining us. IndyCar heading to Mid-Ohio this weekend. It's confirmed, and it's a doubleheader on Saturday and Sunday. Highlights from last year's very entertaining race. Scott Dixon won yet again. Felix Rosenquist almost got his first victory. Later would get that done this year. Thanks for joining us, Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan. Brad Huber is at the Emmis Communications Empire. Let's see. Game times this weekend. First pitch, race time. 4:30. Is airtime on Saturday afternoon for pre-race. I think a green flag around 5 o'clock. That's on NBCSN. That is just rip off the knob if you're a motorsports fan. So IndyCar is right after the Xfinity race from Richmond and right before the Cup race from Richmond on Saturday night. So there's always the chance that we start a few minutes late or start a few minutes early, depending on how quickly things go for the Xfinity race. And then on Sunday, it's head-to-head with opening day of the NFL. 1 o'clock, same time, the Colts will be playing the Jaguars, but it's on NBC Network Television on Sunday afternoon. And for this one, I haven't seen a minute-by-minute. Maybe you have, Kurt, but I'm going to guess that it's one of those deals where green flag is at about 1:05. It's come on the air, and let's get ready and go. So don't delay to join the broadcast on Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. Should be good time because up until Saturday afternoon, we didn't know for certain that IndyCar would be racing. So there, your month plus off in September issue is solved.
It is, and there was a lot of speculation obviously within the paddock that we were going to race. It hadn't been officially confirmed, but waiting on the powers to be in Ohio to make that call. But hey, it's good. We're going to have two more races. That gets us five more for the rest of the season. Two more at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course and then the finale at St. Petersburg. So five more races in a 14-race schedule. All things considered, when we were having these shows in late May and early June, I think we would have taken 14 and run with it. So we'll have a pretty representation of the schedule. Even though we tried to have, 17 or 18 races in 2020, it just hasn't worked out quite like we thought. But another doubleheader, and we'll see if they can keep Scott Dixon from dominating and wrapping up the championship on his, not necessarily his home course, but the course he's owned at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course.
Now, I guess we should also say, unless you feel differently, I can't guarantee there are going to be 14 races, but I do feel more optimistic at this point. I've seen nothing. You know, St. Petersburg is a street race, so that's the one that's going to be the most concerning. I feel pretty confident that something is going to happen. A doubleheader race will happen at Indianapolis. We're hoping it's with fans, but we don't know, or at least some fans at this point. St. Petersburg is a street race. It would seem that it's going to need to include some fans. And do we need an announcement there? I mean, I guess it's been announced. So technically, there doesn't need to be an announcement. What I don't know is, could you buy a ticket for that race at this time? Are we still waiting on that?
I think you're right. I think you don't need an announcement. I would expect sort of an affirmation. Maybe it's from the mayor of St. Petersburg that all green light is being established. Look, I've got the Indianapolis Motor Speedway over my back right shoulder, so I'm pretty confident in the Harvest Grand Prix being held on October 2nd and 3rd. So that would at least get you 13 races, and I've not heard anything more on St. Petersburg. But you've said it before that, you know, we're going to have to see the completion of a track build here pretty soon, or at least the starting of that track build, and before we know, I suppose, 100%.
You know, one of the things I was hearing last weekend was we were due a final decision in about a week or so. So by that timeline, that should be coming any day. I don't know if that's accurate or not. In my mind, I thought it could even go later than that because they weren't totally dismantling everything. And some of the infrastructure, if you will, for the track was going to remain in place. So it might be a shorter time for a track build than otherwise. So I thought maybe you could wait as long as like September 25th-ish and just needed to, I think you need to know before you get to the Indianapolis races, whether St. Pete is the next race or whether it's ending at 13 or if they're going to try to scramble and go somewhere else that's a permanent road course or something else after Indianapolis. So, you know, maybe it's coming this week, but it wouldn't surprise me that they still have another 10 days or so after this to get that finalized. Florida's pretty open at this point. So I feel pretty good about that. Now, every area is different. And, you know, honestly, we know that there are political factions involved in some of these things as well. So that's why it's very difficult to predict exactly what's going to happen. We'll stay tuned on that. And then the other question everyone wants to know and keeps asking is, well, what if I want to go this weekend? Now, maybe it's just come out in the last few minutes, but I haven't seen anything yet about tickets. But I did see some people that had already bought tickets on social media over the weekend saying, hey, I got something from the track saying my tickets are going to be honored. So here's my best guesstimate at this point is that if you already purchased tickets, and maybe they even stopped selling them at some point in March, I suspect they did, but if you've already purchased tickets, I would think you got a pretty good chance of being able to go. I can't imagine that they sold a ton of tickets before March for a race that was coming up. And maybe they were still selling them, you know, through the early part of the summer. But I would think that it's usually more of a walk-up or the couple of weeks before the race. So if that number is low enough, then that might just simply be the number. That said, if you don't have a ticket, I'd call the track in a couple of days. You know, maybe something more official comes out in the next day or two, but I'd give the track a call and see if there's any options. And it may be a matter of their contacting ticket holders like IMS was. Hey, are you planning on coming? You're going to use them? And they kind of have to get a head count and find out what is going to be what from that circumstance. So the good thing is that there's going to be racing. One of the races is going to be on network television. And we have still a glimmer of a championship hope with less than 100 points separating Joseph Newgarden and Scott Dixon. And Newgarden would be one of those guys, Kurt, that while I will be shocked if Dixon doesn't win this championship, I can't rule out Newgarden making a run for it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Joseph has run well at Mid-Ohio. He hasn't run as well consistently over his career as Scott Dixon has, but you know, a couple bobbles, it could happen, but I think we're penciling in Scott for the championship. Of course, his sixth. And, you know, We've seen some really interesting things this season. Obviously, Pato O'Ward still in championship contention. Who would have expected that from the Arrow McLaren SP team as they reorganized for 2020 with two groups? But, man, Scott Dixon, you get off to three races at the start of the season, victory lane. That's a pretty good start to any season. It's reminiscent of what we've seen a few times in over the last 20 years, but not a lot. And so Scott gets his three wins, and that really sets him up well. You know, he just hasn't had a bad race. He's had some fifth, sixth place finishes, but he's not had a trouble, a crash. You know, he was good in the double points race at Indianapolis. He qualified well at Indianapolis. So there just hasn't been a hiccup or a bit of bad luck for Scott. The extent of his bad luck is just not running as well in the second gateway race. That's been just the extent of his bad luck. So looks like a championship season. It feels like a championship season. And, you know, in this year of abbreviated seasons, we were going to see that in baseball, for example, this is legitimate. I mean, Scott's going to have had a season with most of the races held, certainly a large percentage of what we expected from a numbers standpoint, even if we haven't seen the variety of racetracks that we had intended or hoped for. But he's won enough. He has contended enough, certainly been championship worthy. It'll be a championship without asterisk, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. Although the argument can be made that it's still a little bit different, but it's a lot better than what it could have been. And the reason that it's a little bit different is because you're talking about the number of doubleheaders, you know. So like we talked about last week, when you have a bad first race, you have a good chance of being done for the weekend. So what are we going to end up with this year? Road America, Iowa, Gateway, Mid-Ohio, and the road course at Indianapolis. So 10 of the races at five.
Having said that, it's not like he's won doubleheaders. You know, he has not won the back end or the front end. He's not won both races of a doubleheader.
Yeah, I'm thinking more of just in the point standings. I don't think there's anything anyone could do to discredit Scott Dixon.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. There's no debating this. And you're right, Texas, you know, that's a single race. He wins the road course race in Indianapolis. He wins the first one at Road America. The second one is actually really the only bobble the team has had in that one, where he started ninth and was – no, I'm sorry. He started sixth. He started ninth in the race. He won and got a little bit of a break in that one. But they had a stall in the pits because they had run out of fuel, and he lost a few more spots and finished in 12th in that race. But, you know, maybe it adds to something a little bit out of the ordinary somewhere else down the running. But no one's going to argue about Scott Dixon and his worthiness as a champion this season. And by the way, Russ Thompson, our statistician at NBC, looked it up for us, wondering with what is Dixon's lead. It is 96 points with five to go and no double points, keep in mind, this year, like we've had the last few years. So we've been able to, you know, talk about, well, you need to be within 100, you know, with six or seven races to go. And then you needed to be really only within 70 to still have a chance. And within 50 in the final race, it didn't take that much of a miracle. That's about what Dixon was behind going into Sonoma with Montoya in 2015. And actually, I'll look that up here. Yeah, it was in 15, Dixon was 49 behind with five to go. And this actually doesn't say what he was in the last race, but I think it was in the mid-40s or something like that. The largest deficit a driver has come back from with five to go comes with an asterisk. Will Power in 2011 was 62 behind and was up by 11 going into the final race. So he made up 62 points plus some, but still lost the championship by 11 because how did they score that? So that must have been the race before Vegas, because the Vegas points didn't count that year.
That's correct.
Yeah, so it must have been – was maybe Fontana the race before and he crashed?
Yes.
In 11. Okay, so it was, you know, the finale wasn't the finale in that particular race. So in that circumstance, that's one example. In 15, Dixon came back from 49 back with five to go to win and was still a ways back in the finale with double points. 14, by the way, was when double points started. Here's the best one. 2010, Dario was 41 back with five to go, single points, and won the championship over Will Power. So Dixon's got a 50-plus point cushion on what that was this year. In 13, Dixon was 31 behind and won by 27, which was a 58-point swing. But you're telling me there's a chance. Until it's mathematically done, it's not done. And when it's a driver like Newgarden and a team like Team Penske, I think you can keep that in mind. I don't know if other people will be, but I will be interested in best in class, who finishes second, especially when you've got the likes of Pato Award. You know, if he can outduel two Penskes, two Morgan Assies, all of the Andretti's, the Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigans, and what you talked about earlier was supposed to be a bit of a transition year, that's one of the stories of the season.
He really has been terrific. They've been really good as well. You know, their pit stops have been something to marvel at. Although I thought when I went back and watched the second race at Gateway, if they have a perfect pit stop, he probably gets out in front of Newgarden. He almost did as it was, and they had what appeared to be a little bit of a slight delay right at the last second, and you know, but they've been almost as good as anybody. In fact, I might put them ahead of almost everybody in terms of their pit stop times and his in laps and so forth. Just a perfect season from the five car, and honestly, probably could have won a couple of races by now. You know, obviously the Road America one comes to mind, where Felix Rosenquist got him at the end. But you know, he's been good enough to win, and they have been, and Oliver Askew's not been bad. He's had some bad luck, but I think he's had what you would describe as a true rookie season. But he's been.
But the teammates making him look bad, and that's, you know, I think a point of discussion. We were asked about this last week, and I don't think Oliver would be in any jeopardy. But coming into this season, a lot of us wondered, all right, these guys are pretty even. Yes, Pato has a little bit more experience, but Askew is very highly regarded. If they had the opportunity to go snatch a veteran driver that's a semi or championship level driver, would they do it and expand to three? And you know, frankly, the team has shown that being under contract does not matter, right? So yeah. That's why if you're Oliver Askew, you're scared right now. I'm just speaking from his standpoint because the track record is there, and I'm sure he's not making much of a salary. The good thing is that I don't think he had to bring anything. I think he was hired, so that's great. The bad part of that is they don't need your sponsors to keep you in the seat, and they can pay off if they want to, or they can simply hold you to the contract and say, yeah, we'll pay your salary, but you got to stand here on the pit stand and talk to the sponsors all weekend and can't drive for anyone else. So we know you'd get out of that. So I'm kind of rambling a little bit there, but you know, it does say if this was a stick and ball sport, that would have set a bad precedent. That's why stick and ball teams don't go down that path, because they wouldn't be able to acquire free agents because you fired the last guy and didn't pay him all of his money. In motorsport, they'll still be able to get whoever they want because, you know, frankly, everyone's just scrambling to find a drive, especially one that doesn't take budget. But that's a roundabout way of saying, I hope it's not true, but you just can't guarantee anything. You can't guarantee anything. So I'd like to see Oliver do well to finish the season from that standpoint.
Well, this might be maybe a case of, you know, sports writer or sportscaster, you know, trying to analyze the situation. I don't know if Oliver's should be scared or not. I would say no. I think if they're going to
– I would too. I'm saying if I'm him, I would be. I'd just be worried.
I see.
Yeah. Because of the precedent that was set, and you just never know. You know, we all tend to worry about ourselves more than you probably should, and others would say, no, you're fine. Don't worry about it. Well, it's easy for you to say because it's not your life.
Yeah, okay, I understand the context that you put that. I think it's more likely that they run a third car with a championship-level driver than it is that Oliver gets replaced. And I'm looking down the list. I can't come up with someone who's not a championship contender meaning, and let's just go through the list of guys. I mean, whether you're talking about Power or you're talking about Pagano or Ryan Hunter-Reay, any of those guys, those, unless you're talking about somebody like that, I don't see anybody else that just walks in and takes Oliver's seat, because Oliver is I think his potential is there. And Award did have more experience. You know, you can say he didn't run a lot of races last year, but he did have more experience. And, yeah. And so, you know, I'd want to see Oliver in a second year if that was my team.
And I think he's done some nice things this year as well, but it's just one to keep an eye on moving forward. And a lot of those drivers you mentioned, I don't know what their contract situation is for 2021. I don't know if they're going to be available or not. And some strange things are, and this is going to be a weird off season because next year should be pretty close to finalized now by, what is this, September 8th? Well, it's probably not. Maybe it is, and we don't know about it, but we have just passed the midpoint of the season. So really this is early August or late July. Now you just finished the Indianapolis 500 2 weeks ago, which is really when the discussions start to happen. So the point being, everything is going to be truncated. Things are going to happen fast in October and November to try to, you know, because everybody wants to have something done by early December, because we all know that not much happens after about December 15th or 20th until you get to the middle of January. So I think this could be an odd off season, and there's going to be pressure on everyone to just accept it, because I don't know if anything else is going to be out there. So if there's a deal on the table, yeah, that looks good. Let's go ahead and do that. So maybe that means less movement than otherwise. But that's again, in baseball, basketball, and football, we know who are free agents. We know the salaries. We know everything. It's all pretty secretive in motorsports about who's a free agent, who has the option, and things like that. Makes it always a little bit interesting.
Yeah, they're independent contractors, and these aren't public situations. But, you know, I look through the list. I mean, you know, Rinus VeeKay's had a better year than Oliver Askew, but I'm not ready to say that Rinus VeeKay is my guy over Oliver Askew long term. It's just his situation has been different, and he's had a better year once we got the Texas race behind him. And, you know, a guy who's done a nice job this year is Marcus Ericsson. He's another one that you'd wonder where that ends up, but why would you leave Chip Ganassi Racing? You know, if you got a chance to be with them and, you know, I'm going through the rest of them. And, you know, there isn't anybody that's just, you know, had a dynamite season. Ferrucci's had a nice year. Jack Harvey's had a nice year. I certainly don't think Jack's going anywhere. I think his Meyer Shank future is pretty secure and pretty attractive for him. So, you know, again, I don't see anybody, unless it's a Pagano, Power, or Hunter-Reay. Even a Sebastian Bourdais doesn't to me speak to somebody, but they might.
What about Elio Castroneves or Juan Pablo Montoya?
Well, I think those are third cars in my opinion, but either one of those could be. Those are, you know, championship level drivers. Montoya certainly, and Castroneves has been certainly as good as anybody who hasn't won a championship. So, yeah, those could be, but it would take somebody like that, because what I was mentioning, those other guys, Ericsson and you know, Harvey and Ferrucci and Rinus VeeKay, if I'm McLaren and Aero SP, that group, I don't see replacing my guy with those guys. I mean, I just don't know that we have anything different to compare that. Now, if you're talking about a championship contender, that could be the case.
Yeah, it's one of the big names you talk about. If surprisingly Hunter-Reay is available, or if Pagano is available, or Power is available, then that becomes an entirely different thing. I would hope they just add another car. That would be the best case scenario, and it seems like they're pretty well funded with Aero and with the McLaren partnership and all of the McLaren partners on there. So from afar, I know it's easy for me to spend somebody else's money, but it seems like they might be in a position under the right circumstances to bring in a third car. And, you know, when you talk about someone like Elio or Montoya, that would make more sense. They thought these two young guys were worth going at it instead of having one young guy and one veteran. That's how strongly they felt about them. And hopefully that won't have changed. So then it would just be a matter of adding an extra driver in. I covered the IMSA race this weekend, and Juan Pablo Montoya is open. And I think it's got to be the right situation. He's not going to come and just ride around. I don't know how serious he would be about a full-time ride. I think he's less likely to be interested in that. I think he would like to do a full-time sports car ride, but that's a lesser commitment than the IndyCar situation is. I think he'd like to do the Indy 500 in a good situation. He's wanted to do it for the last few years, but he had to make a choice. Leave the Team Penske IMSA deal or go to another Indy 500 deal, which, by the way, wouldn't be as good as the last one he had with Team Penske. Elio is a different story. Elio wants to run full-time. He's open to running an IMSA. I talked with him over the weekend. And after he won the pole, and by the way, he won his second straight IMSA race this past weekend in a pretty good drive. If you didn't see it, Elio started on the pole and had two pit penalties. First was a pit speed. The second was running the red light. There are lights when you exit out, when you're allowed to go back on the track. So he had a drive-through, and then he had a drive-through and a stop and hold for 60. Was almost two laps down, got a caution at the right point to get back on the lead lap, eventually got back up there and raced up to the front. And Ricky Taylor raced up to the front, and Elio held off on a restart to win the race. But after he won the pole, I was chatting with Ricky Taylor, and I think he was more talking to Ricky, but we were the only two there. He walks out of the little Zoom conference call he's in, and he looks at us, he says, "We're open for business." And I think that's meaning not only him, but Ricky as well. They need a job. We're open for business. We're running up front. Somebody come make us an offer right now. And I think he could do a lot worse than Elio next year in IndyCar. That'd be fascinating to see. It'd just be fascinating to see, what does he have on a full-time basis at 46 years old after being away for, you know, will have been 4 years by then.
Boy, that's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, but Montoya was gone a long time, and he wasn't coming from Formula One, straight from Formula One. He was coming from NASCAR. And I know he wasn't 46, but he was in his late 30s at the time, and he had it when he came back. If you've got it, maybe you still got it, as long as the drive is there. And I'd be surprised if the drive is any different for Elio than it was 4 years ago when he was in contention for the championship at the end.
Yeah, Montoya is special, though. I would say, I'm not saying that Elio's not.
Yeah, he's one of the greatest ever. That's right.
So, you know, that's interesting, and I think the McLaren people would be very open to Elio. I think they would be. You know, that's one of those two or three that I think they would really have to think about.
Tight with Jill DeFerrin. I would assume he's tight with Jill DeFerrin. I think he is.
He is. They're neighbors.
Yeah. Exactly.
In fact, they used to live close to each other. Now they live closer, because Elio's just built a house on Jill Street. They're about five houses apart, he told me. I've been to his old house, and you could almost – I could certainly hit a golf ball as poorly as I hit them. I could hit a golf ball from Elio's house to Jill's house. So that tells you how close they are. And, they're buddies. They hang out together, and DeFerrin and Castroneves reunion – at McLaren would be really interesting.
All right, still to come on the program, we'll get into some more about what we expect at Mid-Ohio. Stingray Rob is going to join us in a little bit. Yes, that's his real name. We'll get into the derivation of said name, but he won three races, all three at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on the road course. The Road to Indy raced there last Thursday and Friday, and he won in the Indy Pro 2000, which would be the second step of the three-step road to Indy. So he'll join us a little bit later on in the show. One of the favorites of many they'd like to see IndyCar to go back to. If they go back, it's going to look a lot different. We'll get into that and more coming up in a moment. It's Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
This is Will Power, and you're listening to Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Thanks for staying with us as Trackside continues, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan, ahead of IndyCar in Mid-Ohio this coming weekend. Two races, 4:30 airtime, 5 o'clock start time on Saturday on NBCSN. So they're going to practice on Saturday morning, qualify in the early afternoon, and then race just after 5 o'clock, 75 laps this year instead of 90, and then 75 laps again on Sunday. There will be another short qualifying session. So this isn't going to be the knockout qualifying, right, for either one. It'll be kind of like what they've done for Detroit. So what is it? Is it 15 minutes per group?
Yeah, it's shortened groups. Yeah,
maybe it's 20. Groups. It's 15 or 20 minutes. They'll split the field in half for qualifying. And so the way it works, so the first group goes out. If you have the fastest time, the best time in that one, you will start no worse than second. The second group goes out. Normally the track gets better, and that's the better speed. But if the fastest in group two is slower than the fastest in group one, then the group one fastest starts on the pole, and they go 1-3-5, and then group two is 2-4-6, or vice versa. So whichever has the fastest overall time, they start on the odds, 1-3-5-7. I hope that makes sense. But that's the way they do it in these particular races. So there is a separate qualifying session on Sunday morning, and then 1 o'clock sharp on NBC Network Television. And I have no idea where it's at on the radio, because I presume the Colts will be on right here on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan, but they may shuffle it off somewhere. They should probably send me an email where these are going to air at some point so I can alert the masses, but they'll put it on their Twitter if they like sometime this weekend. But I would think the Saturday race will be here on the radio, and you can always listen on the IndyCar app, the NTT IndyCar app, with Mark Janes and Davey Hamilton, the bunch, on IndyCar radio. Did you see what's happening to Fontana? Auto Club Speedway.
I haven't seen it happen yet, but I see that they have a proposal into the county about a restructuring of the facility. It's currently the world's fastest 2-mile oval, and they're going to knock it down to a 1/2-mile oval, utilizing part of the front stretch and a lot of the infrastructure that's already existing. Some people have wondered, would it be cheaper just to raise it all and start over with a 2-miler or the 1/2-miler? This is not what they're going to do. They're going to utilize part of what they've got already. It's a surprising development from ISC, which owns the property. We've seen IndyCar, we've seen CART, we've seen NASCAR there. I guess we're going to see it in a different light in 2022. So it's going to take about a year and a half to get it ready.
They want to continue there because they want the LA market. And I'm sure the problem is it's not the LA market. It is the LA market, but it's so far away. And it, depending on when it is, it can be really hot and feel like the desert. You know, my first thought is, if you're going to tear up the racetrack and basically build a new one, why don't you build it closer to LA? And if it's a 1/2-mile track, you won't need as much ground. But that's just massively expensive to do that. So I'm sure that's not an option. So this is the best option available. But I think it has a lot of people sad, because that's not one of the races that people said, I don't find interesting. Even in the NASCAR world, that there's only one other 2-mile track, right? Michigan?
That's it.
It's not like the mile and a halves, and maybe it's unfair to call them the mile and a half cookie cutters, because they all have their distinct differences. But a lot of those do kind of run together. I found Fontana interesting.
Yeah, me too. And certainly we saw tremendous IndyCar races there, and fast IndyCar races. If you can remember back to those CART days, there was a 240-mile-an-hour qualifying speed. Christian Fittipaldi in 2000 ran 241. The first year, Mark Blundell qualified at nearly 241 himself. So a lot of 235s in the CART area. The Indy Racing League era, when they returned there in 02, you saw more like 220. So they knocked it down about 20 miles an hour. But it still felt fast, and some really great racing. And I think the lasting memory of IndyCar at Fontana for me will be that last race in 2015 that Graham Rahal won. The race ended with Ryan Briscoe kind of nosing into the infield grass and sod and you know, getting upside down, and that's how that race ended. But just some fantastic racing at Fontana. There was some dark moments, of course. Mikhail Lotion had a huge crash there, just for one, and obviously Greg Moore, his crash. It's just one of those unfortunate circumstances why IndyCar didn't continue racing there. But NASCAR, to your point, has had some really interesting races there over the years, and I've enjoyed them. They're going to try to replicate a high-banked short track, and we've seen some of those. Bristol obviously comes to mind, but we'll see if it works. It's a long way out there in from the downtown and suburbs.
Makes you think, though, because a lot of times people will say, well, why can't they just change this track to make it more racy? You know, like, come on, you can't change the track. That's a huge expense. Well, they're changing the track. NASCAR fans have said, we really enjoy the short tracks. We make more of them. So you wonder, if this works, might they consider making other changes to tracks to make the schedule a little bit more diverse?
Well, this is a pretty dramatic change. I mean, this is not Bristol. You know, they tore up Bristol, Kansas, Vegas, Homestead. But this is a big change.
So we'll see, and this will end that conversation of whether IndyCar is going to be able to go back there, because IndyCar isn't going to be able to race on a half-mile track. That's just too small. And I think a lot of people are always conflicted. They love the entertainment aspect. They love the racing. But then there was always some uneasiness, and there were some within the community that didn't really want IndyCar to race there. You know, I think a lot of it in the last few years has just simply been a business decision. And I was curious to see, with a new NASCAR schedule coming on either next year or the year after, with significant changes that could shake things up, that might open up some things. And also the possibility of running with NASCAR somewhere, because the problem has recently been the only place it could fit on the track schedule was in October. And that doesn't fit IndyCar's plan to try, unless there's a pandemic, avoid running in the fall. And I think we've all seen that, you know, running in the summer just doesn't work. It's just too hot. You're just not going to be able to make the money and get enough people to attend. So it needs to either be an early spring race or a fall race. And maybe there would have been an option if the calendar shifted to run it in the spring, but alas, that's not going to be an option moving forward. But we shall see on some other fronts. You know, we talked about the schedule a little bit last week, and you know, I mentioned that I think Jay Frey has said on the record before, I'd be open to an oval before the Indianapolis 500, and a lot of people would like to do that. So I started to think, well, what could that be? Could that be Richmond? You know, I worry a little bit about Richmond, that they never really tried to reschedule that race, that was kind of just like COTA, that was just a casualty, didn't come up in conversation anymore. I know it's a multi-year contract, but we also know contracts don't matter. So I'm hoping Richmond happens. But here's one to throw out there. I'd love to see Texas. And that depends on what the NASCAR schedule is, because they've run in April before. So that's not conducive to being able to run IndyCar in April or early May. But if for some reason the NASCAR Texas race gets moved up even earlier, or they're only in the fall or something like that, might that be an option? One, two, might Texas and Eddie Gossage be open to that? Because I think they've really liked being after the Indianapolis 500 as a way to promote that event. But maybe you could say, hey, we can find you a date and we'll run it on a Sunday afternoon and put you on NBC instead of Saturday night on NBCSN. They did have an NBC on Saturday night this year, but I think that's special circumstances because it was the first race of the year and there was no other sport happening at the time. You know, just me talking, I'd be surprised if you saw many more Saturday night races on network television. So just throwing that out there. I don't know where things are at, and I'm going to guess they don't even have they're still working on finishing this year, but just some talk for now as we move forward. I think we'll get an IMSA schedule tomorrow, by the way, for next year. So, you know, in some ways that does usually tell us a couple of the IndyCar dates, doesn't it?
Yeah, it starts to give you a sense for what's to come, and I like your Texas idea. I think it'll probably, my suspicion is it stays where it's at.
And probably.
And that's not a bad thing. You know, they've got equity and data equity, and we've seen, you know, even with the Indy 500, data equity is pretty important. So
just thinking of what other oval it could be. The Kentucky Speedway Twitter account handler seems to want IndyCar back, but I don't know if the person running their social media is a decision maker or, more importantly, has access to a title sponsor, which is probably what it would take to get that deal done. But that's somewhere where you could run in early May would be probably pretty helpful for the teams to have a short drive before they come back to Indianapolis.
Yeah, I could see that one. It's a, you know, Phoenix is the one that really makes the most sense, but we'll see.
I wonder if that needs to be with NASCAR.
Well, why couldn't it be?
So I think it could be. I'd like it to be, but I don't know that NASCAR seems super excited about that. I think they did it this year because Roger Penske asked at his event, by the way, if you'll let IndyCar come on and take part. It wasn't going to happen, and a lot of people were of the, well, I'll believe it when I see it type of thing. Now, maybe this has opened up some more eyes, but yeah, that's the one I've had in my mind. And I also think Roger Penske would like, he's mentioned Phoenix before, but I think that's the way that it happens.
I agree.
Because as a standalone, it just didn't seem to get it done. So, you know, both series need to figure out a way to run as lean as they can. If there can be some shared expenses, here's the issue though with that. Is I'm just talking out loud. If that's a spring race, that's a NASCAR Fox race. And it's an NBC IndyCar race.
Yeah.
So that makes it, you could still share some expenses. I'm sure they still share some of the same equipment, but you lose the cross-promotional aspect, which was so huge for Brickyard Weekend.
You would lose some of it.
Continuous broadcast.
Yeah, I agree. You would lose that continuous broadcast. You wouldn't lose all your cross-promotion. I mean, I think the two, under the right circumstances, could do some promotion, not like we mm-hmm. saw at this race, but they would at least mention, I think, if the right people were involved. But it isn't.
Last.
Yes, yeah. It's not as neat and tidy as you mentioned, but it obviously works better and is an all NBC weekend later in the year. But Phoenix is a one place. Roger loves Phoenix. And as we've mentioned, all bets are off now that Roger's in charge. Things get done differently than they did before.
Well, this is the most fascinating schedule period that we've seen in motorsport for a while because it is more of a clean slate for IndyCar. We don't know what Roger Penske thinks and wants. And NASCAR has been very open that, you know, we're starting over, maybe not starting over as much as they wanted to because of the pandemic. And, you know, they're going to have to kind of still be TBD to start the season. And I think they've said we may release it in, you know, like quadrants or something to see and have backup plans moving forward. And back to the IMSA thing, I think some people would be curious about, well, they haven't finalized their schedule yet really this year either. So there are a couple that really come up the most. Laguna Seca is on the schedule at the end of October. And I guess I will just say this. I heard one thing a couple of weeks ago, heard another thing this past weekend that was different. I don't know which one's which, but I would think that might be confirmed tomorrow. If they're going to confirm next year's schedule, I'm hoping they confirm the rest of this year's schedule. And they also race in Mid-Ohio in a couple of weeks. And by IndyCar being allowed to run this weekend, I think that looks good for IMSA in a couple of weeks. That said, things can change. You know, don't go writing anything in pencil moving forward with your plans and canceling something else that you needed to really get done, because it could be 6 days before and the governor could decide, nope, sorry, you can't do it. You can't have a gathering more than 10 people, and that's the end of that. So
I might also temper expectation that the 2021 schedule could be, you know, a clean sheet of paper, because it's going to be really, unless they've had time at the top of this management tree to focus on 2021, they're still focused on 2020. I mean, there is still a lot of grass to be mowed here in 2020 before you can even begin planning 2021. And, you know, I mean,
yeah, I don't think anybody's going to have a beef that the IndyCar schedule's not out here in the next few weeks. I think most people are going to understand that. You know, I know Mark Miles has said hoping for around October 1st or so. That'd be great. But, you know, in some ways, maybe it's better to just go ahead and wait until mid-November. And I know it's not good for anybody. Or maybe we just announce two or three races that we feel comfortable in to get the season started so that group can start promoting. And you may – it's not going to be back to normal. And until there's a vaccine and people feel comfortable in returning our lives to the way they once were, then we're going to have to be flexible. So, okay, we ran long in that segment. So, quickie when we come back, and we'll reset. And plenty more to come. It's Trackside, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
I'm Ryan Hunter-Reay, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Thanks for staying with us. Circling back to something that we did miss. I'm multitasking tonight. Fantasy football draft is going on as we speak. Jackson's got a baseball game starting later tonight that I'm working to get to just down the street and a little bit more. But Trackside Online did tweet something just before the show started tonight. And I hadn't seen this anywhere else yet, so they were the first to get it, that there are still a very limited number of tickets left for the IndyCar race this weekend. First come, first serve. There will be no purchase available at the gate, and there's a link there at midohio.com. So that's what I said before, that I suspected you should just contact them and see where things stand, and that they may be all gone at this point. But it says there will be 6,000 spectators allowed, so that's the first actual number that I've seen on that front. And, you know, some of the numbers, what did I see over the weekend, that there was a number that was being attached to what the Browns and the Bengals were going to be allowed for their games. So that might be kind of an indication as to what we might see as far as this event is concerned. But that's the plan. And then there's also some protocols that are listed there, that you might expect, temperature checks and the normal safety precautions that will be in place. So check midohio.com to see if they still have any tickets if you're interested in attending this weekend. Yeah, here it is. From this past weekend, the Browns and Bengals are allowed a total of 6,000 fans for a couple of their games. Nathan Brown of the Star tweeted that last week. He found that. So, alas, that's the same number for IndyCar this weekend. 6,000, much better than zero. We've got plenty more to come. We're going to get into your Twitter questions at KevinLee23 coming up in just a little bit, and more on the action at Mid-Ohio for this coming weekend, and some things outside of IndyCar that I've found interesting that could have an impact. And Stingray Robb, the triple winner at Indianapolis on the road course last weekend, and Indy Pro 2000 for Juncos Racing will join us coming up on Trackside.
This is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
It's hour number two, Trackside, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan. Thanks for staying with us. Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan, Brad Huber in our MS Communications, drivehuber.com studios in downtown Indianapolis. Still to come, Stingray Robb talks about his experience in Indy Pro 2000 and three wins on the road course last week at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and two more races coming up at Mid-Ohio this weekend where he last won. And IndyCar is headed to Mid-Ohio, and we'll get into some notes on that. I mentioned just before the top of the hour in the short segment we had there, and as I'm catching back up, some more details on this particular weekend. As I mentioned, 6,000 is the number for fans this weekend. And it's those who had already purchased tickets, and they still had a few left over. So check with the box office, midohio.com, or, you know, it's too late now for today, but try calling tomorrow to see if there are any left. And then what I hadn't seen is that fans all involved are going to be required to wear facial coverings while on track property, indoors or outdoors. So take that into advisement. Some people will say, I'm not in for that. And if that's the case, then you can watch on television this weekend, because unfortunately that's going to be the only way that the state is going to allow the event to happen. And we'd like to continue to have racing events, so we will abide by the rules. All right, Chad 200 is always good about giving us some nuggets. And here is what he posted on Twitter today. Scott Dixon has more wins than the rest of the field combined. So let's take note of that for one. Dixon has 5, 2007, 2009, 11, 12, and 14. And let me go into, he finished second last year, right? So I can go back to last year's
stats. No, he won last year.
Oh, I'm sorry, then he won last year. So this, what am I looking at here? So has he won 6 times? Chad never has mistakes on Twitter. Oh, you know what I have? No, I'm sorry. That's not Chad. I'm looking at last year's stats that I have. So he has won 6 times now. Yes?
Yes.
6 times.
I believe that's the actual number. I thought for a moment you meant he had won more races in his career than the rest of the field combined, which probably is close. But
might be close.
But you mean at Mid Ohio?
Yeah. So here is his rundown of other. Let's see how many other close ones. Yeah, I forgot he almost finished second because it looked like Rosenquist was going to pass him, couldn't get it done. Along with those wins, he finished 3rd in 08, 5th 1, 2, 3 times, and a 4th in his 15 races there. So about 12 of the 15, he's run up front. Will Power has 4 poles, 8 front row starts, 4 runner-up finishes, 9 top 6 finishes, and 139 laps led, but he has not won. The other winners active are Alexander Rossi 2 years ago, Newgarden 3 years ago, Pagano 4 years ago, Graham Rahal in 15, and Charlie Kimball in 13. So that's your list for this coming weekend. Who else do we expect to be strong outside in the Scott Dixon Invitational?
Well, all the matters ultimately for the championship is Joseph Newgarden. But look, there's any number of drivers that can win there, partly because the strategies could lend itself to stealing one, if you will. Charlie Kimball obviously ran a good race in 13, but I think Scott Dixon would argue that was probably going to be his race to win, as I recall. There are a lot of guys that can win because there's a lot of guys each week that can win races. But primarily, I think you'd be looking at Power. You'd be looking at Pagano and Newgarden. Maybe Felix Rosenquist, given how well he ran last year. Then Pato Ward would be the wild card. I keep waiting for Colton Herta to have a breakthrough weekend. You know, he's still not been on the podium this year, which is surprising. I think both of us, and maybe most of us, would have thought he might win a race by this point, and he hadn't been on the podium yet.
Well, we didn't think 3 of his teammates would be last, next to last, and 4th from last, or whatever it is as well. So, yeah, Colton Herta is not having the year he wanted, but it sure looks a lot better than everybody else, including a couple of Indy 500 winners on his team. So he's still, all things considered, having a really good season. You know, at some point you expect surely the luck is going to turn for Andretti Autosport. A lot of it's been bad luck. Sometimes, though, they just haven't been quick enough. You know, combination of the two, I wanted to peek back to last year's box score real quick and see what else stood out. You know, obviously we're going to be watching for Felix Rosenquist, who, you know, that's where he did his first IndyCar test. I think he did well in light. So that was a track that he had a lot of experience at. Rinus VK, keep in mind, that's where he tested before last year. So he's been there in an IndyCar before. And I think I saw Ed Carpenter or the team tweeted, you know, it was after this test when we signed him. So that's how well that went. They were convinced that he was going to be their guy. Hunter Ray finished 3rd last year. Power 4, started on pole, led a lot of laps. I can't remember what happened to him throughout the mid of the race, but I remember he was running up front early. Rossi finished 5th. Pagano, Colton Herta, Rahal, Harvey, top 10. Big event for Jack Harvey and Michael Shank. It's his hometown race, so you know you'd like to see him do well in that regard. From a strategy standpoint, there's not going to be the wild card winner like we've seen in the past. So when it was 90 laps, you could generally go about 29, 27-29 on a full tank. So that meant, all right, if we really try to stretch it and the cautions fall our way, we can do it on two stops. And that's happened before. Rossi did it in his win. Rosenqvist was trying to do it, as I recall, last year and aborted and still ended up in the front and almost won. 75 laps means it is an easy two-stopper, which in a lot of ways is good because I know I'm guilty of it as well. And I'm always reluctant to, all right, what do I say here? Because I know we as fans cringe when the announcers start talking about, oh, they're saving fuel. But, you know, in some ways we need to be honest about what's really happening at this point. That doesn't mean you're not still racing, but you're saving fuel if there's not an opportunity to pass. So we don't have to worry about that to some extent. But that said, fuel saving is still going to be part of it potentially. And here's how. So if you can go 30 laps of fuel on a stint, you can do the back math. So if there's 75 laps, that means you could take your last stop around 45. That means you could take your first stop around 15. So you could come in as early as 15 or so, give or take a few laps, and still potentially make it with fuel saving on one more. And then I think the intrigue will be, especially when you get close to that second stop, do you want to be the first to come in? You know, even though you're nowhere close to out of fuel, because say you go 23 laps, which is, I think, how most would probably do. But even with the first stop, you're going to be in the, quote, danger zone. There's your word. But if you don't come in and someone else does past lap 17-ish, where it's comfortable and a caution comes out, your chance at winning is just about over unless you get another caution to fall your way. So there's the drama. So ultimately go back to, I think you're still right. Yes, there's not huge strategy in whether it's two or three stops, but there's still the intrigue of if a caution comes out at the wrong time, somebody could be a big loser or a big winner.
I think that's right. And I hadn't factored in the 75 laps as opposed to the customary longer distance. But you're right. I mean, you know, when you pit, is very important in these races where you don't lose a lap. We saw at Gateway, it was important, where you were relative to traffic. I'm still intrigued and enjoyed watching over. As I mentioned, I watched the second Gateway race a second time, just how Will Power, got caught coming to pit road. First of all, in traffic on the back stretch, which slowed him down, and then followed a car, Ed Carpenter's car, as it turned out, who wasn't as quick on the entry as Will Power was. So there's a lot of factors. We often think about these races just in pure speed and who can overtake, but there's so many elements to deciding a winner. You know, entry to pit road, exit to pit stop, anything along the lines that can cost you time, not necessarily distance to the leader, but maybe a position that puts you in a proper position to win the race. So many factors, and it seems to be amplified for some reason at Mid-Ohio. Maybe it's the lack of long straightaways for passing opportunities, and maybe because Scott Dixon's just been so damn good, but
we've seen some guys make their way through the field. Bourdais has done it before. It can be done. Yeah.
Can be done. In fact, Dixon, one of his race wins came from last place.
But he got a yellow at the right time to make up most of that in the pits. I'm going to say
it can be done.
It definitely can be done, which brings us to Formula One from the past weekend. And they're having the debate that many in IndyCar have had for a long time. And, you know, kind of the joke was an IndyCar race broke out at Monza this past weekend. And I forget who it was, but I saw a prominent driver. I think it was a sports car driver who had either raced in Formula One or had been in the ladder, that kind of thing, saying, hey, maybe Formula One needs to close the pits on all caution. So if you didn't see it, what happened is Lewis Hamilton was dominating what was going to be another snooze of a race. I watched the first three laps in my hotel before I went to the track and felt like, well, I've seen all I need to see. It's over, and left, and I had to leave anyway. So it's not like I gave up on the race. And then I see on Twitter that a safety car came out, and Hamilton, this is a little bit different than a pits close thing. The pits stay open in Formula One, but they closed in this circumstance because the car was stranded at pit in, a safety issue. And there really wasn't a red light there to indicate that the pits would be closed. So Hamilton went along on a local caution, local yellow, and did his pit stop and found out afterwards that they were closed. And he was, what was the penalty?
10 seconds and a stop.
It was a full, like a 5 second stop or 10 seconds or whatever. So on the restart, you know, no matter how they did it, he had two laps to serve it. He was not only going to be at the back, he was going to be about 20 seconds behind the pack because they were all bunched up after the safety car. And this turned in what was going to be a horrible show into one of the best races we've seen, because you not only had randomness up front and, you know, was a McLaren going to win? And ultimately Pierre Gasly won, who had been demoted to the B team by Red Bull to Toro Rosso, now known as AlphaTauri, and he wins the race. And, you know, would a McLaren win the race? They had a chance and others in that circumstance. And then you had Hamilton, what, about 30 seconds behind the pack, showing how good he is. He catches them and I think finished seventh or eighth. Maybe it was eighth, something like that. But still scored points in that to add some drama. So that brings, you know, as much as willpower hates closing the pits, and it does not reward the best in this circumstance, I'm still very adamant that the way IndyCar does it, not only because I think it's safer and it makes it a lot easier for the people officiating the races, but it's still show business. And they're not randomly choosing who the winner is going to be, but there is some luck involved, and it gives us a reason, if you have a bad qualifying day, your favorite driver does, to still tune in on Sunday and watch the race because you're not done yet. In Formula One, 90% of the time, or 98% of the time, you are done if you don't qualify well.
You know, on top of that, you mentioned Gasly. I mean, the first Frenchman in, what, 24 years to win a Formula One race, and after after he had been demoted. And by the way, Red Bull has shown nothing with its replacement of him in 2020. So a lot of interesting things happened in that race. And then of course, Hamilton, you know, showing his skill obviously was fun to watch too. So yeah, for a change, the F1 race really delivered in terms of show quality. It was pretty good TV.
Yeah, that was good. I watched it Sunday night when I got home, even knowing what was going to happen. I just skipped like laps 3 to 17 and picked it up there from about the time of the safety car. Speaking of Formula One, I saw this in the New York Times over the weekend. The basis of the story was, well, they're going to fire the guy in charge, right? Mattia Binotto, and I'm probably butchering the pronunciation. I know I've heard it on the broadcast many times. But the guy that is ultimately in charge, the chief executive, Louis Camilleri, is saying in this story, now we've had way too many changes. We need some stability. He's not going anywhere. And, you know, if it's like a baseball manager, the vote of confidence usually means that they get fired the next day. So who knows? But there is a nugget a little later on that he says, we're studying Indy. It depends somewhat on the flexibility in terms of their future regulations. He added, noting that the chassis and the aerodynamics are pretty standard, which we understand they've done as a cost containment exercise, but the company is not considering entering Formula E despite other car companies fielding teams in the electric car racing series. So take that for what it's worth, but that's the on the record comment that is still a possibility there. Now, what do we think they would want? What are the right circumstances that Ferrari would want that would make this attractive to come and race an IndyCar? And not only you're not just answering because it was such a difficult question, but I can see on your Zoom call that you are frozen. So I've lost the internet connection with Kurt for the moment. I see you moving again. I'll try one more time. Let's see if we can hear you now.
Well, and by the way, you have froze a couple times, even when I was on a different internet signal. So we're struggling a little bit. What would they want? You know, ultimately, I think they might want the opportunity down the road to build their car. And even if it meant having customers, I think that would be one thing they would want, but that may not be a deal breaker. They would probably want a fixed number of customers. They'd want to be able to know that the system would allow them to have quality teams. And so, in terms of, are you talking about engine supplying or just participation? I think we're talking about engine.
I think participation, which probably requires an engine, right? I can't see what it does Ferrari to come and run a Chevy or a Honda or a Toyota.
I just want to make sure that that's what we're talking about. I mean, they would want the engine, and they'd want some teams of high quality to be able to join them. Obviously, there's going to be need a kind of a balance of power to some degree, so you know, when you've got, three manufacturers, everybody's got to have a chance at a quality team or a factory team, if you will, or at least some high level team. So they're going to want, and that's probably it. They want to know that they have a chance to win and be competitive. And I think this series shows time and again that it certainly provides that.
Joe Galt on Twitter says, watch the Italian GP, saw the Ferrari accident, driver crashed an entire barrier. The car was buried to the steering wheel and he was on his own to get out. Two guys finally showed with fire extinguishers, but they made no attempt to help. Makes one appreciate Indy safety, F1 not. It is always strange that, I know they travel their medical team, but it's pretty clear that a lot of times the first people there are just local guys. And it does make you not to throw down on somebody else, and there are reasons for everything. And they're going country to country, which makes things a little bit more challenging, but that does surprise us sometimes that it just makes us appreciate IndyCar. Good on them that they have not tried to spare any expense when it comes to safety. They're doing the best they can.
And by the way, this isn't just Formula One that we compare that to. All forms of motorsports, you're surprised that the IndyCar model hasn't been fully adopted across the platforms because it works. It works so well.
Semi-Formula One nugget that people that are motorsport fan might be interested in if they don't follow the happenings on Twitter as much as I do. I saw someone, multiples actually, tweeted over the weekend that – is it Netflix, is producing a Senna miniseries. We all know the Senna documentary is one of everyone's favorites, whether you're a motorsport fan or not. It was incredibly well-regarded with archival footage, and his life story is going to be part of a scripted series, so not another documentary, and Netflix is reportedly going to do that according to Variety, an 8-episode scripted miniseries about the Brazilian racer set to premiere sometime in 2022. So keep an eye on that. Couple of Twitter questions as well.
Is this where we mentioned that Will Power still has my copy of the Senna documentary?
Good luck with that. You could probably, have you asked him? Because it's pretty readily available.
Would it do any good to ask Will? I can ask Liz. Liz, could you dig it out of his collection?
Yes, there you go. That is a better chance. Luke Sebastian says, wonder what the numbers in Indy will look like with the Colts opener being at the same time Sunday. It's not going to be the highest rated race, if that's what you're looking for, but at least it's on network. It will still do better on NBC than it would against no competition on NBCSN. The Saturday race is later in the day. You've got an Xfinity lead-in. So now there's a point where, how long can a motorsport fan sit on the couch? Well, maybe some can sit there 9 or 10 hours. But most of us would like a break at some point. But you do have that Xfinity lead-in, and then you do have the Cup race on after. So there's visibility. There's visibility for that. And Sunday at 1 o'clock, as they say, would not be optimal. You'd get a better chance at 4 o'clock, but NBC has an NHL playoff game after like 3 o'clock or 3:30 on Sunday afternoon. And keep this in mind, I think we would all feel lucky that there's just somewhere to put the race, that it's not on the Ocho this weekend. This race was confirmed last Saturday. It was confirmed basically 6.5 days before the event. Now, we all know that they had a placeholder for it, but there was still no guarantee at that point. So to be able to get one of them on network television is a pretty good coup where, okay, yeah, maybe it's going to be a really low-rated network race, but it should still be 500,000, I would think, against even really stiff competition. Maybe, you know, maybe I'm speaking out of turn there. It may not. Against the opening of the NFL, because there are events, there are motorsports events in early afternoon on network television. When I see the ratings that are, you know, 400,000 or so. So don't be shocked by that.
It's going to be difficult. How about the note about a certain sports car driver and an IndyCar team that participates getting together to run Le Mans? You have that in your notes?
Juan Pablo Montoya running with Dragon Speed. Yeah, he's going to replace Pipo Durrani, who was said, and Pipo's quote was kind of vague. I don't know if he's concerned about the quarantine time to get back in time and fulfill his primary requirement. It's an LMP2 car, so I haven't looked deeply in Le Mans. I know there are very few LMP1s, so I wouldn't say it's impossible for him to win overall. It's more likely than other years because it's probably just a couple of Toyotas in LMP1. It's very thin right now. But it's still a chance, and I know that's on the list for Montoya. He wants a chance to win overall at Le Mans, so he's going to get – I think this will be his second chance at Le Mans. Yep. So that's interesting for him.
He was there in 2018, I think.
I think so.
But Mimo Rojas will be in that car as well, so they have a lot of history with Ganassi. So,
yeah,
interesting pairing.
Oh, here was the other note. We were talking about ratings, and I mentioned – I don't know if I mentioned it on the show or if I just mentioned it to people. I thought the Kentucky Derby rating would give us a little idea of whether the Indy 500 rating was really bad or not so bad. Did you see the Kentucky Derby rating?
I didn't.
Still massive, but 50% down from last year. So I think that tells you something. Same thing for the Kentucky Derby. And I still think it got a little more play than the Indy 500 because people were betting on it. It was the biggest thing to bet on, but I think it was something like 8.4 million was the average. But last year it was 16.5 million, and they even moved it back a little bit. You know, I think it started right around 7 o'clock. Also, keep in mind for that event, it's not an average over 4 hours like the Indy 500. It's 30 minutes. That pre-race doesn't count. That big number that is put out there of 16.5 million last year is the 30-minute average with no commercials, by the way. So good on them to be able to figure it that way. But that kind of tells you something. I think the Indy 500 was down like 30% or something like that. The Kentucky Derby was down quite a bit more. So you know, maybe you did do really well under the circumstances with the casual fan not understanding the date change and, you know, so much competition on sports television and this, that, and the other. So that's why I think you, in a lot of places, you're going to just have to throw out the ratings. The NFL will be fascinating. They have seemed to be Teflon, but it won't surprise me if even the NFL is down a little bit. That maybe empty.
Except
what?
Except it's date equity they have because we're used to tuning into football right now.
Yeah, I think you're probably
so
right.
So that's the difference. That's the difference with the Indy 500 and the Kentucky Derby and most of these other sports. We're accustomed to seeing it. One thing of note, you know, the NFL's got varying fan attendance numbers. The Colts right now are looking at 2,500 people for their season opener on September 20th. We haven't announced at Indianapolis Motor Speedway what the crowd situation will be like for the Harvest Grand Prix on October 2nd and 3rd. But from my personal seat where I sit, I would think it was going to be, you know, somewhere in the mid-Ohio range, 6,000 to 8,000.
And I think that'll be acceptable.
So just something to keep an eye on. But I don't know that I expect the NFL numbers to be down other than the fact that we haven't had preseason games to kind of get people accustomed to watching.
I think people are seeing that, the preseason games kind of serve as a reminder to everyone. I think the season is sneaking up on people, and there are still some casuals in the NFL, and I think fewer people are playing fantasy football and so forth this year. But that's a discussion for somebody else. All right, Kurt, you're finished. I will handle the Stingray Rob conversation coming up in just a moment, including we'll find out the true origins of his first name. Yes, it's really his first name, and much more. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock.
Sounds good, buddy.
All right, now I'll get some more of your tweets coming up before we're done as well. So we'll have a good full segment on that coming up. But we talk with the dominator of Indy Pro 2000 last weekend at IMS coming up next on Trackside.
This is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Thanks for staying with us. Trackside continues, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan. At Mid-Ohio this weekend, along with IndyCar, the first two steps of the road to Indy will be participating. I think it's another triple header for USF 2000 and a double header for Indy Pro 2000, the second step of the three steps, and the winner of all three races at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway last Thursday and Friday. Stingray Rob joins us now, 19-year-old from Idaho. He's moved to the top of the championship now. You've had, I'm sure, some pretty good weekends before, whether it be in go-karts or junior formula cars. Have you ever won every single race in an entire weekend?
Well, definitely not on a triple header weekend. This is a first for that. But yeah, there has definitely been some races in the past where we swept the weekend, but definitely not in this level. I know that before this year, so it's 2020 now, but my last win before this season was 2016. So I had a little bit of a dry spell that way through, but now we're looking good.
Well, I think maybe we'll start from that. And the reason why you had a little bit of dry spell is because you basically skipped a step. You started in Indy Pro 2000. It was called Pro Mazda at the time instead of USF 2000 at what, 16 years old? And this is now your fourth year, I think, at Indy Pro 2000. You're still only 19 years old. So let's kind of go back to that beginning. Wasn't your first time in cars, but what was the thought process behind not doing USF 2000 and going right up into the second step?
Well, the start, I kind of started to make the transition from karts to cars in 2015/2016. So in 2016, I wanted to do everything that there was, and that included NASCAR, dirt modifieds, Formula cars, Corvettes. I mean, I just drove as many different vehicles as I could, and so from there, I was able to decide, okay, Formula cars is the route I wanted to take. Unfortunately for us, we didn't have a full budget to go to F1600 or USF 2000 is what we were looking at the time. And so we were like, okay, what is another option? And then we looked at the road to Indy, obviously looking at the best series that there is for a straight ladder to IndyCar. And we said, well, Pro Mazda is running the last season of the old chassis, and so they should be having good prices. Uh-huh. And this time, I was with World Speed. And they're a team based out of California. They do a lot of regional events with SECA, and they actually have their Formula Car Challenge program, which is where I kind of bridged the gap between karts and cars. And so they said, hey, Stingray, like, we can give you a really good deal, and it's actually cheaper to run with World Speed and Pro Mazda than it was to go to USF 2000. And so for us, it was like, okay, well, if we can go in Pro Mazda, it's better than not doing anything at all. So we made that jump, and unfortunately, I don't think I was ready for that move. Right away. And then the next season, the new car came out. So it was an adjustment yet again. So those were two big steps. I think that optimally, I would have stayed in USF 2000 and not had to make that adjustment from the chassis to chassis. But I think it all works out well in the end. And now we're with Juncos Racing coming into 2018. And I think that's really where I started to grow, just really started to get my feet under me.
It makes sense. And I think that's solid thinking as well. And ultimately, you'd probably be about where you're at anyways, at 19 years old, competing for a championship in Indy Pro 2000. I don't know that you'd really – I mean, I know everybody wants to be an Indy car when they're 18 or 19, but sometimes I think it's better to be patient. I think you're right along line with the plan, yes?
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I think a lot of people doubted the route that I was taking. Some people within the series that have had many years of experience watching drivers come up through the ladder system and – seen some do really well at all stages. And I'm not sure if you know, but Peter Rossi is my manager. His son is Alexander Rossi. And so they've kind of gone through the ladder system themselves and had their struggles. And so he's kind of seen what may be the best option for what we had to deal with. And so he has been kind of our guiding light to throughout all the different steps along the way. And so I think it's been really good to have that experience in his side of the business. And then kind of just say, hey, Stingray, like this is not the only way you can make it. Like, you don't have to win every single race. We can work on developing you. And so I think I'd be in the same position, and I don't think I've moved up too quickly now. I think I'm in a good spot to where, you know, where you see younger drivers, they go up straight through the ladder system very quickly and they get to IndyCar and they don't last there because they don't have that maturity level that it takes to stay in IndyCar at a high level. And so hopefully when I make it there, then I can have that maturity level and be prepared to stay in there for a long career.
Peter Rossi's first client did pretty well. He made it to Formula One, and he's won the Indianapolis 500, and he's almost won a couple of IndyCar championships. Are you his second client?
Yeah, close to.
Okay.
You know, I think that they've taken me under Alexander's wing as kind of like a, if the shoe fits, if you know what I mean. I'm exactly 10 years younger than Alexander. So for me, it's as he's leaving the sport, I'll be kind of coming into it in that aspect. And I think that they're looking forward to having us compete against each other at some point. One is the young gun and one is the veteran. So I'm looking forward to it. I think that it's good to have that role model, but also as a challenger, you know.
And last year, you know, just 18, it went pretty well. You finished fourth in the championship. What did you finish? Second, like five times. You know, and you're dealing with people like Kyle Kirkwood, who's really, really good. Is it a case where you almost have to have, and in some ways I would say that's kind of your first real year where you're ready to compete. Did you feel that way? Then now this is the season when you had a chance to go after a championship?
Yeah, I think so. I think my first year on the road to Indy was just kind of getting my feet wet into the world of Formula car racing. And then 2018, again, new car adapting. And I don't like to speak badly about the team that I was with, but I think that it may have been a setback running with that team in 2018. And then 2019, I think, was kind of the reset button in the first half of the season running with Tuncoast Racing. And then we saw my true potential coming into the last few races with Portland and Laguna Seca, you know, qualifying on pole, both those events, and then challenging for wins. Despite having a few other issues along the way, we still did very well.
So we'll get to what everyone always asked you about and what they've asked me about before. And this is, when you were a young driver without a win, you got mentioned on the radio show. They want to know, what's the deal with Stingray Rob's name? Is that his name? And I said, yes. And you had told me the origin, but then I looked up on Wikipedia today and it's a different story, I think, than what you told me. So set the record straight. Where does Stingray come from?
Well, my parents were big Corvette fans.
That's what I recalled. It doesn't say that on Wikipedia, though.
Man, I'm going to have to figure out how to get on Wikipedia and fix that myself. But anyways, I actually spent a lot of time at Corvette Club meetings when I was younger. My parents were drag racers a little bit here and there. And so I spent my early years growing up around fast cars. And so they decided to name me Stingray after the Corvette. And my dad's got a 1966 Stingray sitting in the garage at home that he pretty much named me after and hoping I'm going to get to keep one day down the road. But for now, it's sitting there waiting for me. But and then in addition to Corvette name, both my grandpa's names had Ray in them. And so we liked having Ray be in part of my name. And then also my dad's side of the family's from Stirlingshire, Scotland. His heritage is in Stirling. And Sting being short for Sterling, we took all that together and we got Sting, Ray, Rob. So there you have it.
Okay. So that's what's on Wikipedia. So it's kind of a combination of the two. So it's not just totally made up. There is some truth in the matter. Just in, you know, the Corvette story is probably simpler for racing terms. It's easier to tell that story than trying to explain Stirlingshire, Scotland stands for Sting, shortened as Sting. So good enough.
Yeah.
Good enough right there. So before the triple header win this past weekend, you'd already won at Mid-Ohio, and conveniently enough, that's where you head this weekend. What do you expect coming up this weekend?
I think that it's going to be a good weekend. You know, I know that we have a strong car there, and coming off the last three wins, I'm looking forward to do more of the same there at Mid-Ohio. And, you know, one of the challengers that we had at Mid-Ohio was Braden Eaves. And so not having him at this event, I think, is going – I mean, it's too bad to look at it this way, but without him competing, it gives us more of a chance to win. You know, there's obviously a tough field out there. We got Hunter McElroy and Daniel Frost that were very quick there. when we had the triple header earlier this year, along with my teammate Artem Petrov, who had a race win as well at Mid-Ohio. So if we go into this event thinking that we're just going to dominate and clean everyone up, I think that we have the wrong idea. That's going to be a challenge. And, you know, I think this field of Indy Pro 2000 drivers is the best that we've had in a very long time. Not to say that there hasn't been great drivers in the last few years, but I think this is the deepest field of drivers that we've seen.
And we were talking before we got on the air about Braden Eaves, and you have more information than I do. What I've just read was on Twitter, but it sounds like things for him are going as well as they could be after that really frightening crash last weekend at IMS.
Yeah, I actually got the chance to talk to the team owner for Braden, Michael Duncalf, who owns Exclusive Autosport. And he gave me a call because I was just checking in with Braden. He said, "Hey, Stingray, like, it looks like Braden's going to be out for the season, but he is going to make a full recovery. You know, he's stubborn. He's inspired to keep competing, and I think that he'll come back very quickly. You know, with fractured vertebrae in his neck and a few other injuries along the way, I think that he's got a road ahead of him, but at least he's got a good motivation to get back into the car. You know, I think he's very lucky to be up about and walking, and we saw pictures of him at the go-kart track the very next day. So
yeah,
I was really happy to see him, you know, being awake and talking with everyone and making jokes and being his normal self just with a neck brace on. So it's good to see that his headspace is very good. He's ready to get back into a car just as soon as his body lets him.
Championship lead for you, it's still far from over because there are several still within range. So obviously you're hoping to get that taken care of, get the scholarship money. I guess I'll ask this from a driver looking to move up. Is it more difficult to find the seat that you want next year since probably no one is moving up out of Indy Lights? And maybe is next year going to be the strongest Indy Lights season and the deepest that we've seen in a while because of that? You basically have two classes coming together.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, all those points are dead on. You know, we're looking at teams that, you know, may be out of a budget because they didn't have a season this year. They weren't getting paid this year. So for them, having an Indy Lights team at a fair price for a driver is going to be very, very difficult. And then in addition to that, you got other drivers that are looking to be on the best teams, you know, so those seats are going to be filled very, very quickly with the teams that do have funding with drivers because, you know, we got all of the 2019 graduates from Indy Pro 2000 as well as 2020. Maybe some guys that stick around from past seasons, as well as the champion from the Formula Regional Series.
That's right.
They're going to get a scholarship as well to go to Indy Lights next season. So it's going to be a stacked field, and I think that finding a seat will be half the battle there, and then continuing to race will be the other half.
Well, that'll be a good problem for us as spectators to have and for just the industry itself, because that's, frankly, you know, been one of the concerns that the car counts are not what everyone would like them to be. Roger Penske has said that we're going to, you know, kind of refocus and making sure there are incentives for everyone to keep Indy Lights going and make it even stronger. So that's a conversation for a couple months from now. We'll check back in with you about next year and whether we're talking championship or even just coming really close to set you up in really good position to make the step up. Stingray Rob from Idaho has won the last three races. They'll race this weekend at Mid-Ohio on Saturday and Sunday along with IndyCar. Thanks so much. Congratulations on the success, and we'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
Stay with us. We'll see what we've missed and anything else we need to get to in just a moment. Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan. Okay, thanks for staying with us. Final segment from the car at the baseball game tonight. Late one tonight at the yard. And Donald Davidson fan account at Carburetor Day says the show is produced using Zoom? Well, it is sometimes, and to be honest, most of tonight's show was plausibly live, so I could do the fantasy draft and somewhat pay attention. It turns out, well, we didn't finish recording until after 7. I missed the first two rounds, hadn't updated the app, and then I said, I'm done. I've lost interest, so we're going to try auto draft this year. That will probably go just as well. And then I looked and I see I picked like a kicker in the fifth round and so on and so forth. And I think I have 7 running backs and 7 wide receivers and I'm missing a few other positions. But another story. Carburetor Day, though, says, how about using a future Trackside with a zoomed-in audience? 2021 Carb Day Burger Bash Zoom webinar? You know, I actually did think about doing something like that and had the 500 run in May. Maybe that was the plan. And one, I don't think the station has a way to put the Zoom thing on the air live. So we use that when we tape, and we actually have used it some as kind of a second screen when we're on the regular app that allows us to broadcast live just so we can see each other. But the problem we found with that is it took too much internet juice. So we mostly have stopped using that. But it's not a I hope we don't ever have to worry about that again. But it is maybe something we can do. But I don't know how many people you can fit in on a Zoom call. For the love of Indy says, on the Richmond front, they also didn't try and reschedule the first Cup weekend either. I think the city of Richmond had stricter restrictions through the start of summer on public gatherings. Good point, and I think you're right there. You know, I'd kind of hope that, you know, this could be a weekend. Now, it turns out didn't need it because Mid-Ohio was happening, but I wondered if they could attach to the NASCAR race. But the problem with that is they're still trying to keep the NASCAR event as small as possible, so it doesn't really work on that front either. And Charlie Mack, C5, says, can someone please follow up briefly on the letter in a bottle from the 500? They showed drivers putting the notes in the milk bottles, then never heard any more about it. You know, honestly, I don't know much about that. I would maybe tag the IndyCar on NBC site. I don't really know many details of that promotion or what the idea was there. So I'm sorry I can't help you on that front. Maybe the social media team, which we haven't seen. They're not at the track. I'm not at the track very often either, but I have no idea who was behind that. I'm over time. Thank you to Brad Huber back in the studio. Thanks to Kurt. We'll try again next Tuesday. Hope you can enjoy IndyCar from Mid-Ohio. Doubleheader this weekend on the radio somewhere and on NBCSN Saturday, 4:30, 5 o'clock start. Sunday at 1 o'clock on NBC. Thanks for joining us.